Today is Thursday, April 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, more deaths but less hospitalizations in New York, the U.S. COVID-19 epicenter.
We have to remain diligent. We have to remain disciplined going forward.
A new study predicts the coronavirus could have a devastating impact on poverty in several regions of the world in particular.
The progress that has been made over the last 30 years to reduce poverty in those regions is going to potentially disappear as a result of COVID-19.
Also ahead, the virus claims the life of a revered American musician. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump said Wednesday social distancing and other measures aimed at stopping the spread of the coronavirus are having an impact.
If every American continues to strictly adhere to social distancing guidelines, we can defeat the invisible enemy and save countless lives, so we can do it much more quickly.
At the daily White House briefing, Trump told reporters Americans are heading into the final stretch, as health experts suggest social distancing as one of the key measures to tackling the global pandemic. Weekly death totals are expected to reach a new high in the United States this week. There have been more than 14,000 deaths in the U.S. and over 400,000 confirmed cases. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says there is still very bad news on the death rate in that state.
Highest single-day death toll yet, 779 people. When you look at the numbers on the death toll, it has been going steadily up.
The good news is less people are going into the hospital. But Cuomo says while he sadly understands the science of this,
I understand the facts and the logic of it, but it is still incredibly difficult to deal with.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio said Wednesday that deaths at home should also be counted in the total virus death toll. As the COVID-19 coronavirus outbreak worsens in the United States, African Americans are being hit especially hard by the disease, with disproportionately high rates of infections, hospitalizations, and deaths. One of the first U.S. cities to raise the alarm over this racial disparity was Milwaukee in the state of Wisconsin.
The U.S. city of Milwaukee in the north central state of Wisconsin reported its first COVID-19 infection March 13th. The city now has over 1,000 cases, but the data behind those numbers shows a disturbing trend. The city's health commissioner, Dr. Jeanette Kowalik, said African Americans make up only 37% of the Milwaukee population, but they're being infected, hospitalized, and killed by COVID-19 at much higher rates.
From week one, the percentage of African-American cases were, I think, about 70%. Now we're at about half. So African-Americans representing about half of the cases. But as far as people that are hospitalized due to COVID-19 infection, it's 62% African-American individuals, which is very high. And then as far as deaths, it's about 80%.
Similar trends are in cities around the country, from Detroit, Michigan to New Orleans, Louisiana. The Washington Post reported that in Chicago, Illinois, 68% of the city's COVID-19 deaths and 52% of its cases are among black people, despite black people making up just 30% of the city's population. Kowalik said the phenomenon reflects long-standing racist policies and practices toward African Americans in the U.S., leading to negative health outcomes. She said the higher rate of COVID-19 cases mirrors that of other health problems among African Americans. Kowalik said the phenomenon reflects long-standing racist policies and practices toward African Americans in the U.S., leading to negative health outcomes. She said the higher rate of COVID-19 cases mirrors that of other problems among African Americans.
When you look at infant mortality, obesity, lead poisoning, when you look at violence, you see very similar distributions of disease and impact. Until we fix the underlying issues, we will continue to see these distributions, whether it's a natural disaster, whether it's a new outbreak, you name it. When you will have a group that has been chronically disadvantaged, and not by choice, but by force, that you're going to see these distributions today.
Kowalik said one of those underlying issues is lack of adequate housing for African American people, which forces more people to share the same roof in densely populated parts of cities, allowing COVID-19 to more easily spread. A legacy of discrimination in hiring, housing, and education has meant that about 22% of African Americans live in poverty, compared with 10% of whites. And in urban areas with large African American populations, there often is a shortage of high-paying jobs, trapping many in low-wage service industry jobs, including at grocery stores, sanitation, and public transportation, which have been deemed essential services. That means that while most people stay at home during COVID-19 lockdowns in the U.S., many black people are still going out for work, putting them at higher risk of contracting the virus. Kowalik said the disease is killing African Americans at higher rates than other groups because African Americans also have higher rates of underlying health issues, making them more vulnerable. She said this is also a legacy of long-standing racial inequities in America that has resulted in unequal access to proper health care and nutrition.
Heart disease or high blood pressure, diabetes, you know, we see African Americans suffering from these diseases that, you know, are rooted in these racist structures, policies, and practices. When you have these underlying conditions, you're more at risk for being hospitalized. You're more at risk for dying from COVID-19 infection than someone that doesn't have them.
The health commissioner said one way her city of Milwaukee is trying to overcome these inequities is by working to ensure that black residents have enough necessities like food and medicine. That way, they won't need to risk infection by going out to work. She also encouraged businesses to allow sick workers to stay at home during the outbreak.
Don't let your sick people work. I know sometimes people are short-staffed and they really need everyone on deck, but don't risk infecting your entire workforce because you don't want to lose one person for a few days.
Kowalik stressed that everyone must take COVID-19 seriously, no matter their skin color.
Disease does not discriminate. Like when we have acute situations like this, whether it be coronavirus, any new virus, for instance, once it's new to a population, it's not discriminating. It can attack anyone that's a mammal.
COVID-19 has infected around 400,000 people in the U.S., killing about 13,000. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Washington.
The director general of the World Health Organization is warning nations not to politicize COVID-19. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said Wednesday that only national and global unity will defeat the virus. Close to 1.5 million people have the infection, which has claimed the lives of around 87,000 others. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
WHO chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says the body bags from the dangerous infection are piling up. He says nations should not waste time pointing fingers to score political points, but instead should unite to defeat this disease.
The focus of all political parties should be to save their people. Please don't politicize this virus. If you don't want many more body bags, then you refrain from politicizing it. My short message is, please quarantine politicizing COVID.
Tedros made his remarks a day after U.S. President Donald Trump threatened to cut WHO's funding. The president said the health agency was too slow in reacting to the pandemic and that it was too China-centric. He was implying the WHO might have done so out of deference to China, where the coronavirus was first reported. During remarks at the White House, Trump said the United States is going to put a very powerful hold on money it sends to the organization. He says the WHO called it wrong. Trump later backtracked on the funding threat, saying we're going to look at it. The U.S. is the largest contributor to the organization. Tedros says he does not waste his time thinking about personal attacks against him when there are so many other serious issues that need to be tackled. Tedros says he prefers to spend his time focusing on saving lives.
I can tell you personal attacks that has been going on for more than 2-3 months. Abuses or racist comments, giving me names, black or negro. I'm proud of being black or proud of being negro because maybe for the first time I would make this public, even death threat.
Tedros says there's nothing personal about COVID-19. He says everyone in the world is in this together. He says the United States and China should come together to fight the dangerous enemy. He adds the G20 and the rest of the world also should come together to join the fight. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The economic fallout from the coronavirus pandemic could increase global poverty by as much as 500 million people, or 8% of the world's population. A just released United Nations University study finds that a setback of that size could reverse a decade of global progress in reducing poverty. Joining us now to talk more about the report is co-author Christopher Hoy with the Australian National University. Tell us about what you found.
So our report shows that for the first time in 30 years, poverty around the world is likely to increase. We show that up to, depending on the severity of the crisis and how governments respond, up to around 500 million people could be pushed into poverty as a result of the crisis. And this would set back progress that has been made around the world by over a decade. And in some regions, sub-Saharan Africa and Middle East and North Africa, progress would be set back to what the levels of poverty were in those countries in 1990.
Are there any areas in particular that really stood out to you?
The nature in which COVID-19 will affect different countries and the impact then on poverty ultimately depends on how far above the poverty line the bulk of the population is. And what we see in the case of East Asia and the Pacific, for example, a lot of people are above the extreme poverty line, but are very close to what the World Bank calls like the middle income country poverty line. And so we see huge increase in poverty in East Asia and the Pacific of people moving from being just above the middle income poverty line to just below the middle income poverty line. Whereas if we're talking about extreme poverty, well, then the focus really needs to be on sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia, where similarly you have the bulk of the population lives just above the extreme poverty line, and then they will fall below. Because what we're actually illustrating here is that while people may be above a poverty line, they're actually quite vulnerable to falling below when a big shock hits, and a shock like COVID-19 is a huge shock to their livelihoods, to their economy, and it's going to set back progress for many years.
I imagine it will have a pretty severe impact on developing nations that are already struggling, particularly where there may be conflict going on. But what about some of the nations that are not quite as impoverished? Are they also going to see more poverty?
I guess the focus of our report is on the developing world, and I guess most of the pockets of poverty there are actually in stable economies. And what we're illustrating is even in, say, East Asia and the Pacific, and relatively stable countries, such as, say, Indonesia, we would still be expecting tens of millions of people to potentially be pushed back into poverty as a result of COVID-19. So it's not only about fragility, state fragility and conflict. In those areas, obviously, COVID-19 will have a devastating effect. You look at the refugee camps set up, say, in Bangladesh from people who have fled Myanmar, etc. You know, the COVID-19 will have a devastating effect there, but it won't just stop there. It'll also be present in developing countries which are more stable. The impacts in Middle East and North Africa and sub-Saharan Africa will be the most severe. The progress that has been made over the last 30 years to reduce poverty in those regions is going to potentially disappear as a result of COVID-19 if governments don't act now.
Does your report point out any suggestions how nations that are expected to really be hit hard with this can mitigate the consequences?
Our report presents the effects of COVID-19 based on a number of scenarios, and the governments and policymakers have the ability to, I guess, ultimately determine which one of those scenarios their country will be on. We recommend that countries consider rolling out social protection programs, so safety nets and cash transfers, just like what we saw in the developed world. And I mean, in the United States, we've seen the fact that households are going to receive payments from the government to help them get through this crisis. And these sorts of cash transfers at the household level are needed even more in developing countries. But we also have to recognize that it might be well beyond the fiscal capability of a lot of developing countries, in which case maybe there's need for debt cancellation from the World Bank and IMF and other sort of international donors to ensure that there's adequate fiscal space for developing countries to spend big in their country so households can get through this and receive some kind of cash transfer to buffer the shock, just like what we're seeing in developed countries.
That's Christopher Hoy, professor with the Australian National University and co-author of a new report on global poverty. Barring anything unforeseen, Joe Biden will represent the Democratic Party against President Donald Trump this fall. The former vice president's place on the general election ballot was cemented on Wednesday as Bernie Sanders announced he was ending his campaign. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Sanders once had a big lead in the Democratic primary, but is now some 300 delegates behind Joe Biden.
And the path toward victory is virtually impossible.
Telling supporters in a video message he's suspending his campaign and congratulating Biden without explicitly endorsing the former vice president. Sanders says he knows some wanted him to keep fighting through the Democratic convention, but given the virus pandemic,
I cannot in good conscience continue to mount a campaign they cannot win, and which would interfere with the important work required of all of us.
Biden now becomes the presumptive nominee against President Trump. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Africa's biggest airline, Ethiopia Airlines, has lost more than $500 million since January because of the coronavirus pandemic. Despite the financial loss, the company's CEO remains confident the airline can keep flying, in part by increasing its cargo business. Simon Marks reports for VOA News.
Ethiopian Airlines CEO Tewolde Gebremariam told reporters on Tuesday the airline had lost $550 million between January and April as the coronavirus pandemic brought passenger traffic to a near-complete halt. He acknowledged the airline is in a serious financial crisis and also reported that three airline employees have tested positive for COVID-19. He said the three are in stable condition. But Tewolde expressed his belief that Ethiopian Airlines will ride out the current storm. He said the company was cushioning the financial blow by finding new streams of income.
We are now focusing on cargo. The cargo business is relatively doing well because urgently required medical supplies are needed all over the world. From east to west, west to east, north, south, and so on. We are also trying to convert some of our passenger aircraft to cargo.
He also said the company has saved money by cutting back deeply on daily flights and suspending talks with Boeing and Airbus to replace older aircraft in its fleet. Airline industry experts say some of Africa's air carriers are likely to go out of business during the ongoing crisis. John Grant, a senior analyst at the aviation data firm OAG, told VOA via a messaging app that Ethiopian Airlines was better positioned than any other African carrier.
Their management team have done a better job. They have a more diverse network. They're using modern aircraft. You know, they've got a good hub in Addis that feeds Europe to South Africa, feeds West Africa to Asia and the Middle East, feeds South Africa up to the United States and other points. So it's, of all of the African carriers, they are probably regarded and perceived as being the best in class.
Grant also lauded the company's move into the cargo market.
Cargo capacity at the moment is very, very scarce around the world. And by virtue of having some both dedicated cargo aircraft and swapping in some passenger aircraft and using them for cargo flights, that in the short term can generate some revenue. It's never going to generate as much revenue as the passenger flights. But, you know, it keeps the cash coming in. And at the moment, the rates for cargo are anything up to six times what they were three, 4 months ago, because there is this scarcity and this urgency to move items quickly.
Before the coronavirus pandemic, Ethiopian Airlines was Africa's busiest carrier, making more than 350 flights per day to more than 100 destinations. Simon Marks for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
Here are some of the other top stories we are following. In China, the lockdown of Wuhan, the industrial city of 11 million where the global pandemic began, was lifted after 76 days, allowing people to come and go. Wuhan residents will have to use a smartphone app showing that they are healthy and have not been in recent contact with anyone confirmed to have the virus. Schools, though, remain closed. People are still checked for fever when they enter buildings, and masks are strongly encouraged. The Saudi-led coalition fighting the Iranian-backed Houthi rebels in Yemen announced Wednesday that its forces will begin a ceasefire starting today, a step that could pave the way for the first direct peace talks between the two sides that have been at war for more than 5 years. The conflict has killed over 100,000 people and created the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Millions are suffering from food and medical care shortages, and it has pushed the country to the brink of famine. To help curb the coronavirus spread, officials in Los Angeles, California, are starting a massive effort to bring thousands of homeless people off the streets and into hotels to protect them and others from infection. California Governor Gavin Newsom announced last week that money from the federal government would help pay for at least 15,000 hotel rooms during the pandemic. But Los Angeles County, with the state's largest concentration of homeless people at some 60,000, has set its own individual goal of 15,000 rooms. Stay with VOA for all the latest on the coronavirus pandemic.
Hello. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
While the majority of attention during the COVID-19 pandemic is focused on physical health, San Francisco-based internal medicine physician Rujun Misra tells International Edition's Steve Miller that mental health is also crucial.
Everything that we're going through and the wounds that are going to be inflicted by this pandemic are going to be outlasting what our physical scars will be. And they will, you know, they'll heal a lot sooner than the mental scars for the survivors. I think that's why it's really important to talk about mental health and some of the ways that we can improve our ability to deal with the stress-inducing shared life event, because stress actually causes a decrease in our immunity. It releases hormones like cortisol that can ultimately decrease our immunity, and we need our immunity to be completely 100% or as good as we can get it to be so that we're able to deal with coronavirus, not only physically, but also mentally.
So what are some of the ways that people can improve their mental health status to keep their immune systems up and to keep themselves in better spirits to deal with the challenges that may be coming?
So there are a lot of things that we can do. They don't cost anything. So that's nice, because obviously a lot of us are losing our incomes and we're very stressed about that already. So these are some of the things that I think can really help us. One, eat a well-balanced diet. Two, stay well hydrated, get enough water that you're supposed to be getting. Three, exercise daily. And the fourth one, which I think is a little underrated, but everyone is talking about these days, is meditation. Now, I know we can feel very isolated during these times, so it's important to also keep connected with people that we trust, including friends and family. And we can do that virtually through FaceTime or other video and obviously audio devices. And then the one main thing that, you know, I would like to stress on that we don't think about a lot, but we do a lot, is that we're constantly either watching the news or reading the news, or we're on social media. And we're just being bombarded, even unconsciously, by updates and news about coronavirus. And honestly, these repeated daily encounters about COVID can really be very exhausting and they can get overwhelming. So it's very important that we limit the amount of time that we spend each day reading about, you know, updates and being exposed to coronavirus news, because if we do this all day, it's just, it's going to get out of hand. So it's also important to do something that we enjoy on a daily basis so that we can feel like we have our life under control. And on the same note, important to have some me time, even if it's just 15 or 20 minutes a day, if that means getting up earlier than everyone else in the household so that you can have some time alone to yourself to center yourself and regroup, that's very important.
A year after a fire that shocked the world and destroyed the roof of Paris's ancient cathedral of Notre Dame, France is marking the first anniversary amid the coronavirus pandemic. Workers who were removing lead contamination ahead of reconstruction were sent home as part of efforts to contain the spread of the virus. Nicolas Pinault reports from Paris.
It has been a year since the iconic towers of Notre Dame were engulfed in flames and smoke, its ceiling collapsing and leaving the ancient building weakened. It has also been a year since French President Emmanuel Macron promised to rebuild the Paris landmark quickly.
Nous sommes ce peuple de bâtisseurs. Nous rebâtirons la cathédrale Notre-Dame plus belle.
In an address last year, Macron said French people are made of builders and that Notre-Dame will be rebuilt even more beautifully within 5 years. He assured the French it could be done. A year later, Parisians, tourists, and Christian pilgrims are still mourning the loss of one of France's best-loved monuments, which attracted 12 million visitors in 2018. Cédric Bergen is priest and a vice dean of the Paris Catholic Institute. He remembers the dramatic scene a year ago.
Ça reste encore très ancré. Je vois bien qu'en me promenant à Paris et notamment.
He says the memories of the fire are still vivid when walking around Notre Dame. He sees many people next to the building to see it or pray outside to remember that shocking event for French people. The scaffolding is still visible from outside the building. He was present on the building prior to the April 15th fire due to restoration work. The heat of the blaze welded it together. There are an estimated 551 tons of metal are still on top of the cathedral. The issue has become an important hazmat concern after last spring's huge fire, which released thousands of kilograms of toxic lead dust into the atmosphere. Decontamination efforts took months to make sure the neighborhood around Notre Dame was safe, and workers have to wear protective equipment to operate on the site. Lately, the site has been silent. The removal of the melted scaffolding on the cathedral's roof, originally scheduled to begin March 23rd, cannot take place under the country's coronavirus measures. Father Benoît de Sénéty oversees the construction's efforts for the Paris Diocese.
Mais le travail continue, bien sûr, pour réfléchir à l'installation future de la cathédrale.
He explains to VOA that the work is ongoing to conceive the cathedral's future and what will happen around the building during the reconstruction to welcome visitors, pilgrims. Nicolas Pinault for VOA News, Paris.
Finally today, Grammy-winning singer-songwriter John Prine, who explored heartbreaks, indignities, and absurdities of everyday life with songs like Angel from Montgomery and scores of other indelible tunes, died Tuesday at the age of 73 from complications of the coronavirus. Prine wrote his early songs in his head while delivering the mail and later emerged in the 1970s to become one of the most influential songwriters of his generation. In 2013, long after surviving throat cancer, he was diagnosed with an unrelated and operable form of lung cancer, which he also bounced back from and was often seen later on stage with younger musicians. Prine won the Lifetime Achievement Grammy Award earlier this year. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Mungagne, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and please take care and be well.
He weren't much to look at.
just a free ride.